powers are competing for control over Ukraine, using and inflating in their global power struggle militant nationalism of Ukrainian government and similar militant nationalism of pro-Russian separatists in Donetsk and Luhansk. Peaceful life of Ukraine was destroyed by these militant nationalisms and great power struggle. 8-year bloodshed took thousands of lives of civilians, turned millions into refugees and internally displaced persons, devastated our economy and debilitated our society. That's why we are grateful for all people supporting peace in Ukraine and around the world. There are wonderful Code Pink actions in the United States, and we do a report with Medea Benjamin against the war in Russia. And tomorrow, our friends in Berlin, in Germany, will call for the escalation of conflict between Russia, Ukraine, United States, and NATO countries. Our friends in Berlin are making human chain between the embassies of United States and Russia. It is the best symbolic way to show how bonds of humanity between people should prevail over fear, hatred, and historical warmongering.
Yuri, we want to thank you so much for being with us, and we will be revisiting you soon. Yuri Shelyachenko is the executive secretary of the Ukrainian Pacifist Movement, board member of the European Bureau for Conscientious Objection, and World Beyond War. By the way, all of our transcripts are online of every show, of every segment at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Simone, Sinner Man. If any of you out there are not familiar with Nina Simone, please do yourself a favor And that tune, easily findable on the internet, is a good place to introduce yourself if you're not familiar with it or her. Anyway, so yeah. Where are we going to run to on that day? What is that day? When will that day arrive? That song makes me think of so many things. By the way, I am back after a month absence. Any of you who might have been wondering what I was up to, well, I just kind of had to take a break. I did a show. The show before I took my break, I don't know. I felt like I kind of lost it. I've never floundered for words so badly on the air before, and it kind of hit me. But I had already been going through a lot, you know, accumulation of COVID, accumulation of this and that. That movie Don't Look Up really got to me. I think I've talked about it on the air, and that's what we're going to talk about some further today. We're going to talk about, heck, why not just jump right into the worst of it? We're going to talk about the methane climate bomb. There's a new information out recently about the rapid accumulation of methane in the atmosphere, which those of you faithful, longtime listeners of KBOO who listen to both my program and Teresa's program, News You're Not Supposed to Know, she talked a lot about the methane clathrate bomb, the whole issue of climate change, probably more than other people on the station, in terms of the sort of the worst case scenarios. I don't know. So yeah, that just it really kind of, there's a difficulty in general of for me of doing talk radio, because just a sense of, I don't know, what do I really have to add to the conversation? I guess that feeling, you know, of maybe not being up to the task, I must admit. The overwhelming nature of what's going on, and just the things like climate change that are just so huge that words fail us. So what, you know, how do you even talk about it? Those and other things have, sometimes occasionally made it difficult to maintain. But, you know, I do feel this is an important role, and I feel like I've acquitted myself relatively well over the years. I feel like I've brought a lot of important guests, a lot of important information. I think I've stimulated people to think and feel to some extent, to maybe probe a little deeper under the surface. So, yeah, if people obviously didn't really feel like I was, presumably they would make that known. And I appreciate KBOO's existence. I appreciate KBOO's letting me have this platform. And I guess with that, I'll just mention that we are in our winter membership drive. I know we've had we had kind of an extra one in there, so it may seem like you may be surprised we're doing one again. But this is the regular time for our winter membership drive. We had that extra one because we we fell a little short in our fall drive, and we needed to pick that up because, you know, we do need to pay our staff a minimal wage. They are probably not getting what they deserve on the open market, and we need to appreciate their willingness to carry on in the face of everything, and I applaud our staff. We have, you know, equipment, some of which is rather outdated, needs to be maintained, really needs to be updated. So there's just the regular maintenance, the electricity, you know, all that. And we do rely on massively on volunteers still. We've been able to maintain through this COVID pandemic. Who expected that? 2 years and counting. We've been able to maintain, you know, with ups and downs of the economy, with Trumpism, with this and that, and we're still going strong. We've been able to, you know, move to a whole different model of automated programming. I presume we're going to slowly, hopefully, start coming back more to live programming. More and more programmers, I notice, are actually being able to present their programs live remotely as well, which is, you know, it's a whole learning curve. And so, yeah, so here we are, still doing it after 52 years. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. I may not have even mentioned that. And we're going to be talking about the methane climate bomb today. But I just wanted to give you a chance to express your support for the station right off the bat here. We're in the middle of what we're calling our all thrills, no frills. Ain't that the truth? Except, you know, KBU does provide a lot of thrills in general. We don't have a lot of frills. We basically ask you for the minimum necessary to keep this station going. And yeah, we're bringing you different theme days of special programming. And to support KBU, go to kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to 44321. We'd like you, if possible, to become a monthly sustaining member. That just takes money out of your bank account, if you have one, if you have one that has sufficient funds to maintain this vital community service. And then, yeah, it just happens automatically every month. You know, $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever you can give. As I said, this, you know, it's a really no-frills operation. We basically, you know, we make do with what we've got. You know, occasionally we'll get a larger grant in order to upgrade some equipment. Our server, for example, a few years ago, we updated that. We're looking to update our air room. It really needs to be done. But for right now, we just need to keep this ship afloat and going. So, yeah, now I'm going to get into our program with the phone number 503-231-8187 to add your comments. So, yeah, I was talking about the methane. There's a bunch of articles come out. There's one just came out on Valentine's Day. Dangerously fast methane increase suggests feedback mechanism may have begun. So, yeah, those of you who are familiar with the these very, very complex dynamics of climate change. And, you know, there we're basically seeing them as they unfold. You know, we're really understanding climate as it progresses, climate change as it progresses, because, you know, we're in uncharted territory. So things that are happening now that actually have never happened on planet Earth, or may have happened millions and millions of years ago and may have happened in a very different way. Because, okay, before I get into this methane thing, let's just let's see if we're all on the same page here. So, okay, so we came out of the last ice age, and, you know, we've had these periods of, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ice age, these interglacial periods, relatively briefer, where the temperature goes up, releases the greenhouse gases that were stored, you know, under the ice, in the ice, that were the heat was kept out by the glaciation itself, by the white ice and snow, which is called the albedo effect, which is diminishing because we're melting the North and South Poles and the Greenland ice sheet and the glaciers, all of which have served to maintain this precious interglacial warming period, which allowed the flourishing of the very civilization which has created the Industrial Revolution, which is now kicking it into overdrive. Basically, this has never happened before. We never had a species that was able to do what the human species is doing and actually add greenhouse gases that wouldn't have been added from natural processes, from thawing and biological activity, etc. So yeah, this Industrial Revolution kicked everything into overdrive and added at an unprecedented rate carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, including methane, which we're going to talk about, and has now we're in over 420 parts per million of carbon dioxide as measured, say, at the Mauna Loa measuring station, or Mauna Kea, I can't remember which one, in Hawaii and other places on the planet all around. And this is just hasn't happened at the rate at which it's happening. That's perhaps the key component, is the rate at which that we're making these changes. These changes are being made. Okay, so methane concentrations in the atmosphere have risen at a, quote, dangerously fast rate and now exceed 1,900 parts per billion, prompting some researchers to warn that climate change itself may be driving the increase. Climate change itself may be driving the increase. You know, and that's beyond the massive amounts of methane that's released by fossil fuel production facilities, through the distribution leaks in the pipelines, through fracking results in massive amounts of methane. And none of this is measured precisely. We need to have more precise measurements. But of course we don't. It does seem like the leadership of the world doesn't really want to fully know. So atmospheric methane levels are now nearly triple pre-industrial levels. A news article in the journal Nature states, citing data released last month by the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the NOAA. Quote, scientist says the grim milestone underscores the importance of a pledge made at last year's COP, that's the Conference of Parties 26, which is the UN group, which involves almost all the nations of the world, which has been tasked with the grappling the climate crisis. And so 26 means the 26th one, which is over more than 26 years. Obviously hasn't really amounted to much. So the pledge made at last year's COP26 climate summit, the one in Scotland, to curb emissions of methane, a climate pollutant that nature cites as at least 28 times more potent than CO2, but is actually 80 to 85 times more damaging over the 20-year span when humanity will be scrambling to get the climate emergency under control. Yeah. While the research focuses to some degree on methane release through microbial action, Nature says nearly two-thirds of the methane releases between 2007 and 2016 were caused by human activity. When the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's a UN body, the IPCC, released its latest landmark climate science assessment in August, researchers pointed to rapid deep methane cuts as the single most important step in stemming the rise of the greenhouse gases that cause climate change. In early November, scientists warned that the 30% reduction pledge at COP26 fell short of what was needed. The new research shows the problem is getting worse. The growth of methane emissions slowed around the turn of the millennium, but began a rapid and mysterious uptick around 2007, Nature writes. The spike has caused many researchers to worry that global warming is creating a feedback mechanism that will cause ever more methane to be released, making it even harder to rein in rising temperatures. The report explains the analysis scientists conduct to accurately attribute methane emissions to different sources, from microbial activity to fossil fuel production. Xin Lan, an atmospheric scientist at NOAA's Global Monitoring Laboratory in Boulder, Colorado, said microbes account for 85% of the emissions increase since 2007, with the rest due to fossil fuel production. Quote, is warming feeding the warming? It's an incredibly important question, said Royal Holloway, University of London, earth scientist Yuan Nisbet. As yet, no answer, but it very much looks that way. It goes on. It doesn't actually talk about the details of what these microbial action are. Let me just finish this. But regardless of how this mystery plays out, humans are not off the hook, Nature adds. Based on their latest analysis of the isotropic trends, Land's team estimates that anthropogenic sources such as livestock, agricultural waste, landfill, and fossil fuel extraction still accounted for about 62% of total methane emissions from 2007 to 2016. So what they're saying is the added, this mysterious uptick that they talk about since 2007, which actually is not so mysterious, not really that mysterious to a lot of people who I've been reading about who study this and think about it. But the increase seems to come not from, you know, the human caused, the usual suspects, livestock, agriculture waste, landfill, and fossil fuel extraction, which still, again, accounts for the lion's share of the methane output. But the increase, this uptick in the last 15 years, is due to other sources, and they're getting a higher share now of the methane output. So what are those? Well, NOVA, the PBS program NOVA, had a program recently on the Alaska permafrost thaw being the clue to the mystery of Arctic methane explosions. There's a picture of one of those on the KBOO website, or my program page, Wednesday Talk Radio, of this. You know, it's probably been at least 5 years, maybe up to 10 years, that people first started noticing. I don't know if you, the listener, have come across pictures of these mysterious craters. And I must say, the irony of these craters and this recent film, Don't Look Back, about a comet heading toward Earth. And you know what comets make, of course, much larger craters than these. But there's a strangeness in all this. So the permafrost, at some point I'm going to read an article about what the permafrost is. But I don't know if any of you saw it. I missed that NOVA program. So about these Arctic methane explosions, Siberia and elsewhere. So University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers have been investigating the appearance of these craters, sometimes big ones, in northern regions. That's where a rapidly warming climate has thawed permafrost and allowed more methane to percolate upward from deeper in the earth. As the thinking goes, the methane travels upwards and forms a kind of tube, not unlike magma in a volcano, and then builds up pressure at the surface until, kaboom, it erupts, sometimes even with a fiery explosion. Of course, these are areas that tend to be very lightly populated, if at all, so not many people have actually witnessed these things as they go. In fact, it was considered a mystery, again, not to the people that I've been reading for years and years, but in general, considered a mystery, so that people didn't know what the heck was going on. But apparently now the scientists are on the case. Longtime permafrost researcher Dr. Vladimir Romanovsky with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute, a professor emeritus as of this week, is featured in the NOVA episode that aired a couple weeks ago. And Romanovsky says there are several reasons to keep an eye on the exploding methane phenomenon after the first crater was just discovered in 2014. Okay, there you go. So it's really been only 8 years since they probably had started a little bit before, but this is a very recent phenomenon. So unprecedented new phenomena in the climate change area are always areas for great concern, because as I said, we've set in motion dynamics that haven't been seen in millions of years, if ever at all. And I say again, if ever at all, but just because of the rate, you know, when these, in these long cycles of ice ages and interglacial periods have been going on for millions of years, but, you know, they have kind of their own internal dynamic. They're never exactly the same. And then things like comets hitting the Earth change things, and, you know, the evolution of life on Earth changes things. Forests, the development of forests, everything, you know, nothing really stays the same. But within the not staying the same, these long cycles, they've had a certain rhythm to them, shall we say. And we may be exceeding those rhythms is what I'm trying to say. So Romanovsky, so it's still in discussion, the process, the physical process behind this phenomena, but I think it's more and more clear that there's some protrusion of high pressure gas, and this protrusion goes from below the bottom of permafrost toward the surface, and eventually when the pressure is high, then it just erupts and removes this cap. And these pieces of frozen material and the big chunks of ice are flying away very far sometimes, like 300 feet and even more away from the crater. So, we've really released some monsters here. Okay, so the thawing permafrost is one of these feedback loops, this microbial action. Another one are the methane that's frozen. That's methane that's frozen underneath the permafrost. There's also methane that's frozen under the oceans into what are called these clathrates, these sort of ice crystals, including methane. And they're frozen sometimes way deep in the ocean and sometimes relatively shallower, like the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, which is what people have been pointing out for probably 10, 20 years now as this ticking time bomb. That speculate or hypothesize that these have gone off in the past when there was a rapid warming of the climate and rapid warming of the oceans, which is happening. Air, land, and sea are all warming up. And the release of these could have caused, massive extinction events. We're just actually, ironically also, science is developing at a rapid pace as the climate is changing at a rapid pace, and we're only really beginning to understand some of these, even these historic events, these historic dynamics, as we've set in motion this unprecedented current situation. All right, well, I'm going to just briefly stop there. And again, put out our phone number, 503-231-8187. So I'm just putting this out because I think, I believe in the truth. I believe we need to know what's going on. Some people might prefer not to know what's going on if it's as bad as it seems like it might well be. What are the worst case scenarios? I think we owe it, certainly to the younger generation, to get the full picture as much as we can put it together. The problem is, and I'll just add this element to it, we're still playing these archaic geopolitical macho militaristic games, these authoritarian power games. They are games, they're deadly serious games, but they're a form of game. There may be an ego game, their social game. Psychoanalysts, sociologists have explored the phenomenon of power and the status and ego struggles and all that, and there's another piece of the puzzle we do need to understand better. Unfortunately, it's happening so fast. Okay, so I like the last guy, the guy you talked about, the guy from the Ukrainian peace movement, who still is putting out the reasonable, rational reality that we have to, we can't keep doing this. We have to stop militarism. We have to stop the fossil fuel economy. We have to stop playing these games. We have to stop the status games of being able to fly, to a vacation in wherever on a moment's notice, to have the business class be able to fly around the world constantly. COVID was a kind of an interesting wrench briefly in this thing that showed that, maybe we could actually stop flying so much. We kind of had to for our global health. Well, why don't we do it for the global health of us and the planet? Yeah, we got to stop this addiction to speed, the addiction to power. We have to rein in the global militaries. The militaries are the number one emitter of fossil fuels. It all has to stop. It's not stopping. We know that. But I admire people like the last guest on A Democracy Now! Who keep on speaking truth to power, speaking sanity to insanity. And so neutrality. Why do we have to keep, NATO versus whoever? Why don't more, there used to be the non-aligned bloc or whatever during the Cold War, which was, very interesting to see those non-aligned countries developing an alternative to the global power games during the Cold War. Well, why don't we have a movement towards countries declaring their neutrality all around the... Okay, so all of a sudden we've got three callers. Oh my God, and here I am just going on and on and on. So let's go to our first caller, which is Kathy. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Paul. Great topic. Have you read Bright Green Lies by Derek Jensen, his latest book?
There's actually like two or three authors, I think. Yeah, I actually haven't, but I've read enough about it to have a pretty good idea of what it's about. I actually had one of the authors, Max Wilbert, on this program last year. It's an important topic.
Yeah, I just finished it, and wow, it's just jaw-dropping, and it talks about all of the external effects of the renewable energy, like all of the, not all, but as many as they could get to, and I think something like 4 years of research. And what the result is that it's almost worse, if not actually worse, to continue down this road of our solution so far as to going with renewable energy, because it's like only adding onto the landscape more impact, and it doesn't take away the fossil fuel impact. So we result in a damaged landscape, and we really need that landscape for the whole other approach to calming the climate, which is biological approaches such as going to really sustainable forestry, not what's paraded as sustainable forestry now, but and then also I forget the restoration agriculture, organic agriculture, all the different agricultures that restore soil and instead of depleting soil,
which is still only 1% of agriculture in the United States, for people who may think that it's made more of an impact than it has.
Yes, and all of the wonderful activist energy now that is focused on making demands of governments to change, it seems like what exactly are they asking the governments to do? And in general, it's to just stop using fossil fuels and switch to renewables, but it doesn't really get at the core, which is that, as you said, stop flying around the planet, stop, centering your life, or thrown halfway across the country. So many families are just thrown all over the world, whereas, it used to be we would live our lives very close to where we lived in our families and our communities, and travel was relatively rare. So just that alone would just, dramatically reduce. And that, was during the 60s, that was like, I was a little young for that, but I was watching as a young person, what they were talking about was exactly what we need to do. It's just living simply, consuming less, trying to share, whatever we can, whether it's shelter, organic agriculture.
You mean the hippies were right?
What's that?
You mean the hippies were right?
Well, I'm saying yes, and it's like it's to many people it's like, well, we tried it, and it didn't work, people wouldn't adopt it, but you know what, that was then, this is now. We have a lot more people's attention now, but it's not something you could sell. You're a big corporation. You can't really sell, well, stop buying our stuff, right?
That's the fundamental contradiction. Well, you've made a whole series of excellent points. I encourage people to pick up and read that book. I think I'm pretty familiar with the framework. I mean, basically what they're saying is what you just said, which is that, you know, it's adding a whole other layer of production, basically, is what it's doing, without actually getting at the underlying problem, which is overproduction, you know, overproduction, yeah, and overconsumption, over distribution, over everything, hyper everything. And that's the problem, which, you know, a lot of people encapsulate in the word capitalism. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Certainly the profit, you know, nature doesn't know profit. Nature doesn't create an excess that can be distributed only to a small minority of people. No, it doesn't work that way. So if you have a, you know, if you create a class system which demands that you squeeze extra, you know, you squeeze the extra labor from the people who work for you, and you squeeze extra resources from the earth to transform into commodities to be able to sell to make a profit, that ultimately the contradictions inherent in that process create the accumulative effect of damage to both people, cultures, societies, and the ecology, which we're seeing now in the most extreme form in climate change and species extinction. And yeah, it's got to stop totally. And so Bright Green Lies is a book which came out last year by Max Wilbert, Derek Jensen, and I think maybe one other person, and is talking about... What's that?
Leah Keith, I think, is her name.
And talks about the contradictions within the environmental itself, which is why it's called Bright Green Lies, and talking about how it's really, in a way, just masking the fact that the climate crisis just goes on basically unabated, and that these kind of half measures, if you were, or measures that aren't actually addressing the real root of the problem, are just creating confusion in the minds of people. I agree with all that. So I thank you for bringing that up. Kathy?
Yeah, he points out that the actual need right now is kind of for a third, you know, the environmental movement to actually split itself and start having this dialogue with itself, because this is just wasting energy, and it's really part of the reason why the crisis continues, that we've been aiming at the wrong goal, we've been using the wrong tools and means.
I like that. I do need to read that book, because yeah, I've been urging that for some time. I think that what we, you know, we have the illusion that we are the ones who have the answers, and everybody needs to listen to us. But a lot of times, we don't even have the conversations that we really need to have,
exactly,
whoever we are. Okay, yeah. So Kathy, thank you for bringing that up. We have a couple other callers, and 503-231-8187. Is the number to call. And before we go to Camilo, hold on just a second. We are in the middle of our All Thrills, No Frills winter membership drive. And as I said, we had an added membership drive just a month and a half or two ago, whenever that was. And because we fell a little short in our fall drive, this is our regularly scheduled winter membership drive. So we're actually back on schedule, thanks to our special membership drive we had in December. But just because we're back on schedule doesn't mean that we don't need to have our regular income, which, because of our model as a listener-sponsored station, our model is that we are able to come to you directly through, and we don't have to send out massive mailers constantly. We do send out some mailers, it's true, usually kind of reminder notices, but we rely, you know, because we have the airwaves, we have this little slice of the airwaves at 90.7 FM here in Portland anyway, and also on our transmitters down in Philomath and out in the Gorge. We can talk to you directly and remind you that I think only, 15-20% of people who actually listen regularly actually are members, are contributing members, which is fine. We love people to listen to the station. That's what we're all about. But we also need a certain number of you to step forward and to acknowledge that even though it is free over the airwaves, it's not free in the sense that there are a lot of costs involved in making this happen. And so to defray those costs, we have members. We have contributors, we have members, we have donors. And that's how we pay the bills, folks. So if you want to be one of those, if you didn't pay last time around, if you're a due up perhaps, maybe you haven't contributed, maybe you're just a fairly recent listener to KBOO and you haven't gotten a chance to do it yet, well, this is your chance right now. And we have a website at kboo.fm where you can see right there on the homepage how to do it. Just go to donate, or you can just go directly to kboo.fm/give. You can also use your mobile device and text KBOO to 44321. Check out all the great programming specials we've put together for you at kbo.fm/thrills. And, just really appreciate everyone who was able to support KBOO, including yourself if you are one of those people. Applaud yourself. So yeah, that's what we're all about. We are a listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio station. We've been around 52 years. How about that? It's really a great place to be associated with. I love it. And I think you probably love it too. And I think you might want to express that love and that appreciation by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. You know, with these mobile devices, we can multitask. You can listen. Used to be you kind of have to get off the air and go to your phone and call up our membership special department and maybe miss some of the program. Well, you can just text KBOO to 44321. Okay, we've got Camilo up on deck. Are you still there, Camilo?
Yes, I'm still here.
Good morning.
I'm a patient person, and the patience is really worth it because I have an opportunity to say how much I appreciate KBOO, how much I appreciate you, Paul, and your program, and I just want to say welcome back. It's good to have you. I was a little anxious that something might have happened, and there may have been some political questions, but it seems
No. You know, I was, you know, with all the occasional politics that happen at KBOO, it does happen, but, you know, that's because we're a lively a community place where, you know, people have a lot of different approaches and opinions. But no. I was worried that there might be concerns either about my well-being or whatever. And you know, if we weren't in COVID, we would have had a regular announcer, you know, someone, you know, going on the air between shows, and they would have been saying, oh, Paul's taking a break for a month just to, you know, because he was a little burnt out, frankly, Camilo. He was a little burnt out. And I think I'm feeling a little better for it. Just that little low-level stress of putting together a show every week I didn't have. So, and I appreciate your concern. But anyway, you're here, and what do you think about the methane, Camilo?
Well, I think that the way the program has been going up to now has led to what's on my mind regarding methane and regarding the whole way that we are dealing with climate change and the different kind of sectors of the movement that are involved, as was described in Kathy's commentary. I first learned about methane when I read Jen Bendel's article on deep adaptation in 2018. And in it, he discusses the fact that the thing that's different about methane, not only that it's 40 to 80 times as the impact of carbon, but that it's, as is happening now, as you've described, it releases very quick, can be released very quickly. And the distinction that's important about that is that we've been looking at climate change unfold over hundreds of years, but the release of methane, as you just described, is increasing. And in his article on Deep Adaptation, he mentions a period sometime in prehistory when there was a methane bomb, and in a matter of 10 years, almost all life was extinguished. So, you know, this is the possibility that we face. And he also described the potential of the clathrates under the sea releasing very quickly, but we don't have enough science in order to sort of make those kinds of predictions. But we know that the potential is there. So it seems to me that we have to acknowledge the possibility that there's not much that we can do, or at least certainly that we are willing to do, that would make sufficient change in this sort of positive feedback cycle, and that we need to be motivated by the possibility of collapse in order to do everything that we can to mitigate the worst aspects of it, and particularly regarding environmental justice, and make sure that the people who suffer the most don't have to suffer the worst when these events occur.
Indeed.
Those are my thoughts.
Well, you know, I want to just address very briefly what you just brought up, which is a very difficult and sensitive subject. And I want to be sensitive to it. I don't want to be that white guy who disregards the, you know, the historic racial and injustices and other injustices of this world, and just like a lot of environmentalists have done, frankly. Generally white guys who have made really insensitive comments, and you know, the whole talk of overpopulation is one of them. It's just fraught with that, you know, just a historical blindness and racial blindness, etc. And so yeah, I do want to acknowledge that it is a reality that climate change is hitting us unequally. It is hitting, unfortunately, those communities which are already hit hard. I mean, just look at the Cancer Alley in Louisiana. I mean, it's just despicable. It's just despicable. Those people have had to deal with grinding poverty, racism, and already chemicals, and now they're often hit by, you know, like when a hurricane hits a chemical plant, and you know, these releases. And of course, we never know how much they're going to release. Anyway, yeah, we know. We should know. All of us should know that these are just realities. What I want to get at is that the whole environmental justice discussion doesn't really get at the speed at which climate change is happening, and the possibility that it could, I mean, it could just wipe away all distinctions, not just, you know, between rich and poor, black and white and brown, but, you know, and humans, non-humans. We're talking about, as you just said, the possibility of a mass extinction event here in a, you know, in a who knows how short time. People are talking about years now, not just decades. The people that I read, people are talking about, you know, now that people are actually seeing these craters happen from the explosion and the permafrost, we're seeing these mysterious rapid increases in methane. You know, satellites are detecting this stuff. We're seeing it happen, play out before our eyes. So we do have to entertain. I don't know. Yeah, I don't. Maybe there is not much to do about it. But I think we owe it to ourselves to talk truthfully about it, I guess, is why I continue to talk about these things on the air. And, you know, I don't know, maybe make peace with ourselves. I think of that, you know, the Sinner Man, the song, the Nina Simone song, just so many parts of that resonate. The part, you know, I run to the Lord, she sings. I run to the Lord. And I think of that last scene in Don't Look Up. I assume you've probably seen that film where they, you know, that family sits down to pray together as the comet is coming. And these are grim, you know, these are grim thoughts, but these are grim realities that we're facing.
But I think what's important to remember is that although these are grim thoughts, it doesn't have to be result in our becoming despondent. It doesn't mean that we're helpless. It it means that although we may not be able to prevent it, we can prevent the worst way that it plays out among the various forces in society. I mean, we can try to see that it plays out in a way that is just. And you know, all we can do is just keep talking about it, it seems to me, and you know, not be intimidated by people who say, "Oh, this is just doomsday talk."
Well, I still think, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and I'm, you know, I resist despondency. I resist passivity and falling into despair. I resist it. And I think, you know, we need more support. We've talked about this already, Camille. We all know we need more support. We need to get together. We need to form affinity groups. We need to, but what I, you know, within the, in terms of movements, I still believe that we need, you know, it's not like eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we may die. No, we can't just go down without more of a fight. And the problem is, as Kathy pointed out, people aren't willing to really fight it out, even amongst ourselves. People aren't really willing to have these difficult conversations. At least now, you know, in Portland, we're having more, at least, of these, you know, racial inequity conversations. That's good. That's incredibly important. But we need to have these conversations, say, like within, you know, the quote environmental movement, as we need to have these discussions about capitalism. You know, we need to have these discussions about the nonprofit industrial complex, this whole falling into the, you know, our funders won't support us if we talk about certain things, if we address certain things, you know, like the capitalist economic system.
No, and that's the great thing about KABU is you don't have those kinds of inhibitions because we're paid for by the people.
Right on. And that's the model we need to move towards. And, you know, that's what was so great about, my experience with Earth First and other really grassroots. I mean, we were totally almost exclusively self-funded. I mean, then there is all the cultural, social contradictions. We were mostly white. And, you know, our learning curve was slow on a lot of things. But because we weren't beholden, we were able to just do, you know, we were able to see that the forests were falling, and the only thing that could stand in the way of the forest falling was us. And we saw that the big environmental groups weren't able to do the kind of things we were doing. And, you know, and then they started to support us, the big environmental groups, because they saw that we were actually driving the protection. Unfortunately, you know, we're kind of back, we always go back to square one because, you know, eternal vigilance is the price of, you know, environmental protection and freedom. And so, you know, we're still seeing the threats to the forest at a time when we absolutely need those forests, when the ancient forests are still, you know, some of the biggest carbon sequesters on the planet. And yet, you know, the Biden administration isn't stepping up and demanding. You know, we're still, the Forest Service and other agencies are still, including the Oregon Department of Transportation, you know, allowing massive amounts of cutting to go along the corridors, you know, along the roadways, you know, where the fires were, in the name of, you know, because they think, you know, a tree might fall, you know, 300 yards away and slide all the way down the hill and hit somebody on the road. It's ridiculous. They're just using more excuses to be able to get out more the cut. There's all this still pressure from the timber industry because, you know, anyway, I'll stop.
It's great to have your voice back.
All right. Well, thank you.
As much as I can say for now. Good luck.
All right. Thanks, Camille. Bye-bye. Always good to hear you. Gosh, I've just been going on and on and on, and we only got 7 minutes. And I think our last caller, if he's still there, has been probably waiting like 20 minutes or more. So let's just go to Robbie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Actually, 24 minutes, but I love your show. So I always love listening to your show, and I'm really happy that you always try to provide these conversations. I wanted to bring up, you know, the whole thing in Ukraine, as much as, you know, the media would have us believe it's Russian aggression, this is directly related to energy, where you're trying to control Ukraine's energy. I mean, that's besides the point you know, I mean, we can, that's a whole nother topic, but me as an activist, one thing that I've always tried to bring up, and it always seems to fall on deaf ears, because I try to do actions. I believe in, you know, direct action as a way of getting what we want done. And I believe I've tried to talk about it with you about energy devices that are being suppressed from us. And one of the main ones is, you know, HHO converters. Every vehicle that drives, every combustible engine right now can be retrofitted to run on dirty water that otherwise you wouldn't be using. And this is a technology that we have. And that's why, you know, I'm such a huge proponent for that, because if we had people not, you know, doing the fossil fuel industry thing, then we would be having, you know, we might be able to push where we're trying to go. But I don't see that, you know, and it does fall to like this whole, like, oh, we're, there's no solution. But I mean, I wrote my first book about it. There's this GEAT reactor that has been suppressed. You can look up Stanley Myers, water fueled cars. These are technologies that are very here, but we've created a world of pseudo intellectuals. This idea that, oh, well, we're humans and we're smart, and if we have the technology, we'll eventually, you know, it'll be sold to us. And that's a lie. And that's the biggest lie that is harming our environment, because if people knew this technology existed, we would not be, oh, well, you know, eventually it will be sold. Or, you know, think of how, you know, 20 years ago when I was having this debate about renewable energy with solar and such, people would say things like, oh, it's impossible. There's not enough solar power to power the entire country of America. And I was back then, you know, speculating that that was a lie, you know, and then fast forward 15 to 20 years, we're still having the same debate. And the thing is other countries are now proving that they can power their entire country with nothing but solar or wind. So the lie is very real. And I think if we aren't aware of these technologies that exist, we won't be demanding them. And that's going to be adding to this, we don't know what to do now.
Well, I again confess my own perhaps laziness, or just whatever, not willing to maybe expand my own horizons. I still haven't looked into that stuff that you've mentioned. I guess I have some initial skepticism that, you know, with everything else, busy lives and, you know, so much to look at and overwhelmed, et cetera, you know, if you're not enthusiastic about something, you don't really necessarily check it out. So I will check out what you're saying. But, you know, that what you're saying could go for all sorts of things. And, you know, in I just want to quickly, you know, what Kathy was saying, the bright green lies and all that, I agree with it. But I certainly don't dismiss the role that, you know, passive solar electrical solar and wind and other things can play, and the role that, you know, small scale, you know, creative community solutions, and I include now what you're talking about, and again, I don't know that much about it, but I think there's lots of things, you know, because of what you just said, that we expect things because of the capitalist system has dominated our thinking and our actions for so long. Our individual and community creativity is diminished, and so we don't explore a lot of these possibilities that we could be. So I guess that's the only response I would make. I gotta let you go because we're out of time, and I need to make one more plug for the station.
Would you even know what to look up with?
Yeah, I just wrote it down. Don't be sarcastic here. Okay, I gotta go, Robbie. Thanks for calling in. Thanks everybody else for calling in. We're out of time, but yeah, we are in our winter all thrills, no frills membership drive, kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to 44321. We really, really, really appreciate and depend upon your support. And please continue it or start it if you haven't yet. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Paul Rowland. Great to be back on the air. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. And stay tuned for more great programming here on The Boo.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.